This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring retired FBI special agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
And I'm not saying Doug was any angel here either. I don't think he was. I think these were both two toxic people in a very toxic relationship that did not mesh well together at all. Let's take a look at some of the closing arguments here from the defense of Ashley Benefield and the story that they're arguing as to why she had battered woman syndrome and why may not have necessarily been justified by an outside view, but in her mindset, this was the only option. Let's take a look.
Doug Benefield shoots a gun into the ceiling of their kitchen to intimidate Ashley to stop speaking, throwing a loaded gun at Ashley Benefield, threatening suicide, punching the dog so hard that he knocked the dog unconscious, threw the cat down the stairs, put a tracker on her car. The neighbor catches him in the yard at night, cursing, yelling, screaming, belittling. Text messages, I'm in a murderous mood. I want to rid the earth of them. Take them out. That was about two guys having a conversation while Ashley was on a cruise. Doug Benefield was so demented that just hearing in the background two men speaking while Ashley was on a cruise makes him say he wants to take them out, rid the earth of them. That puts him in a murderous mood. How about driving from South Carolina to Florida so that you could follow Ashley in the car? I mean, if that's not determination, what is? If that's not fixation, what is? If that's not obsession, what is? And most chilling, I thought, was Mr. Vince Accaro, the realtor, who, while the injunction is in effect from South Carolina, look at the email between Doug Benefield and Vince Visicaro. I asked him, did you have any dealings with Douglas Benefield? Yes, I did. What was it? He was a customer looking to buy a home. Where was that home? It was the house immediately behind Ashley Benefield's house. This is sick, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, again, I don't think Doug was a great guy. I think Doug had a lot of issues, a lot of jealousy issues, a lot of anger and rage issues. I think there's plenty of evidence for that, especially the email or text that she found from the ex-wife talking about him kicking her on the honeymoon when he basically couldn't get it up and had to use Viagra and took it out on her. I believe there's probably verbal abuse, but she flat out said, Ashley said, there was never any physical abuse whatsoever, not to say that there couldn't have been mental or emotional by any means. But some of those things were in that he was listing were really just he said, she said. There wasn't a lot of evidence behind everything that was listed. A couple things did, but not all of it. Is this an issue? And some of it, was it Ashley thinking that he was more so like stalking her or going or trying to be down there with her, making it about herself, when he was really just trying to be close so he could have a relationship with his daughter, which she was preventing, which no court ever said, you can't have a relationship with a daughter. She was willingly and manipulating to keep him away. I mean, this could have been a dad that just wanted to be near his kid.
Well, this is not unusual at all for the other parent, especially if you're co-parenting, to want to be in close proximity.
Yeah.
So not for stalking, but because you want to make it as convenient as possible to see your child and your child to see you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this made sense. The other question I had or statement, you know, after he reads off all these things, I just want to ask one question. Then why in the world did you have him over to help you move?
Yes. If he's that dangerous, you're that afraid of him, why is he showing up? Why are you ever manipulating him to come by?
Exactly. I mean, that's obviously why, you know, more, you know, the charge of second degree was initially charged. I think truly in that jury room, and maybe we'll hear from some of the jurors. I have not heard anything from them yet, but maybe this was kind of what they reached as an agreement, mm-hmm. right? No, they couldn't 100% agree with the other in light of some of these other domestic violence concerns, in light of the fact that Doug isn't the best guy. And so, you know, for that reason, they agreed on the manslaughter.
Yeah, it's a case that I've been back and forth on after seeing her testimony the other day where she was hysterical. But then hearing from within the courtroom that there were no tears, we can only tell so much, even though we're watching this in high definition, you know, back here. You still can't quite see tears perfectly. So I was wondering, you know, are there tears going on here? But apparently there was not tears going on there. In fact, it even took a little while to even get a tissue. Like someone had to be like, here, you want one? After a little while, she'd even go grab for them when they were right there. It was kind of a prompted, oh yeah, I need to do this. And I caution anybody who's like, well, tears don't mean everything. Really? Because we were arguing the exact same thing in the Alec Murdaugh trial in Snotfest of that. This was kind of, it felt like in a similar way, instead of snot flying out of her nose, she just really, she knew how to go into hysterics and turn it off very quickly. Never coming, she went came back into the courtroom after taking that break, no eyes puffy, no face kind of swollen. I don't know anyone who's been through that level of hysterics that wouldn't have something going on, red eyes at the very least. You know, makeup can cover a lot of things, but not that.
Right. Yeah. It just seemed like a performance, as I mentioned. And the other thing was, I really enjoyed the medical examiner's testimony. Mm-hmm. It's been difficult to listen to the medical examiner in the Karen Reed case. So this was so refreshing to have somebody actually have an opinion based on scientific evidence and from their experience. And the bottom line is he was shot in the back of the calf. Mm-hmm. How did it get to the back of the calf? He was shot in the side, really, of the nipple going, you know, to the back. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't front. It was really side and the back of that calf. And I am just not buying. I really believe just personally that was the first shot. And it makes sense to me just from a firearms instructor standpoint that somebody that doesn't shoot all the time, one of the biggest problems they have is they anticipate that bullet and it goes low, goes lower than they meant, and they readjust and then it goes higher. And I think that's on the turn as he turns. Mm-hmm. And then of course she misses two other, or grazes the arm and then misses the other shot. But that's important information, too, I think, that it just didn't really match up when she tried to explain everything. She kind of went into that flailing hysterica, mm-hmm. or hysterical state and never really could get out what happened.
Let me ask you one more question about the story, because I always found this part to be overly dramatic. I guess it's not impossible, but it was the cartoon moment of what happened. He fell down and his legs went flying up in the air. I know the prosecution argued that too, of like, how does that even happen? Unless he's like tripping over something. It's almost, I mean, it's like a cartoon moment to think that would happen. Is that an insane thing to say? Could that have actually happened, or was that added for dramatic effect?
Well, the medical examiner said something very interesting, and that was that, of course, the chest shot was the one that killed him, the mm-hmm. fatal shot. But he could not testify as to how quick it was. In other words, was it just instantaneous, almost that he fell and then, you know, ended up dying? You know, how long it took, I shouldn't say to die, but to incapacitate, mm-hmm. where he couldn't further move. So if you keep that in mind, I think it could make sense. And then also we know he had a very serious injury to the head, right? Which the ME said likely where he struck something on the back of his head. So I can sort of see on that side shot, him falling back, striking his head. And because of that, the feet sort of being lifted. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was to the cartoon fashion that, you know, it was sort of painted, but I can see the legs sort of lifting up as he was whiplashed back, mm-hmm. As he fell.
Well, it's fascinating. The jury came back. You know, I got to say on this one, I think it was pretty, I think it was a good decision. I think it was one of those, almost like we were thinking with Karen Reed too, where there's a level here where I do understand, because I do think there's something going on. My conjecture is that she has a personality disorder of some sort, combined with some abuse that she's dealing with. But at the same point, you combine all that together, you can create very poor judgment. I'm not saying that she couldn't have truly felt like she was in the level of danger that she was in, but I think she was trying to walk her way out of it too much for something that really didn't need to happen. And there was a lot of manipulation prior to the actual shooting itself. So I'm going to say bravo to the jury on this verdict. What's your thought on how it came back in?
I agree. I think this was appropriate. I don't think they were able to truly prove second degree beyond a reasonable doubt, but clearly the manslaughter just jumped off the page of, you know, of guilt in that regard, I believe. But to say it was to a greater degree, I just don't think, because of there was some abuse, I think, that existed here. Yeah. And in her mind, you know, how are we to say that 100% she didn't feel threatened? Mm-hmm. I might not buy how she presented it on the stand, but all of her actions seem very concerning. I do find it, you know, to me, the biggest fact that the prosecution had was that she invited him there.
Yeah.
So that totally goes against truly the fear. But then what happened once inside of there? So I think this was such a great verdict. It's 30 years that she's facing. I know it's not life like a lot of people would love to see her go, because, you know, Doug's gone. Doug's gone forever, not to enjoy anything else in his life. Mm-hmm. And but I think this was a just verdict.
Yeah, I agree.
Are you ready to listen to this podcast ad-free?
Then hit subscribe to the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel now on Apple Podcasts.
You'll instantly have access to all of our episodes labeled Advance Ad-Free. You'll hear the interviews before everyone else and with no interruption.
No interruptions.
Subscribe to the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel now on Apple Podcasts.
And start binging now.